The market is moving fast. And all of that speed puts you right in the middle of the action.
I feel the need for speed.
Trying to pick out the stocks, mutual funds, and ETFs that are your real targets from the ones that will make your portfolio crash and burn. Investment research firm New Constructs looks for the telltale signs in corporate filings that show which way a security will move next.
Warning, warning.
Whether it is flying a true course or misleading the investment public about its prospects.
Son, your ego is writing checks your body can't cash.
New Constructs separates all securities into those that are attractive and the ones that are, well, dangerous.
Danger, danger.
Every Monday on Money Life, company president David Trainer shoots down one security whose actions he thinks have it headed for trouble.
What you have done is wrong.
Whether you simply sell it or get aggressive and sell it short, you'll want to know which securities to have on your radar as Money Life enters
the danger zone. It's time for our trip into the danger zone. Actually, in this case, we are traveling to, say, the danger zone back in time, or maybe a Twilight Zone edition of the danger zone. I'm not sure how we want to describe it, but before we take off in the danger zone in 2016, well, we want to take a look at some of the highlights this week, and then next week, we'll come back and look at some of the lowlights from the danger zone picks that you heard here on Money Life in 2015. Now, the danger zone, that's our weekly segment featuring David Trainer. He is the president of New Constructs, which evaluates securities on a scale of most attractive to most dangerous. Each week, David joins us on Money Life to help us sift through what is dangerous and what makes something dangerous. And it's important to know that New Constructs starts their research at the footnotes level and works up. So what tends to be dangerous are things where if you're looking at the top line stuff, you see numbers that David characterizes as misleading. If you want to know more about how it works, go to newconstructs.com. Follow them on Twitter at New Constructs. David Trainer, Happy New Year. Welcome back to Money Life.
Happy New Year, Chuck. Great to be back.
So let's start, like I said, this week highlights, next week maybe some lowlights in terms of how your danger zone picks worked. What are the ones that really stood out to you as like, yeah, absolutely hit the ball on the screws, hit the nail on the head this year?
We crushed it on a bunch, but some big highlights include Men's Warehouse, El Pollo Loco, Groupon, Twitter, and Box.
Okay, so let's take those one at a time. Men's Warehouse was the first one you named. It's ticker symbol MW, and that was in the danger zone early in the year, right?
Yeah, and it's down 72%, while the S&P was down just 3%. It's a classic pump and dump story where you had insiders on both sides of the big acquisition that pumped the stock up, and that was the acquisition of Joseph A. Bank. They were acquiring a bad business, and you know, there's a guy who was an investor in both companies, and so he won and got out after they pumped the stock up around the hype of the acquisition. And ultimately what happened is what we said would happen is that the numbers would eventually, we didn't know exactly when, and it took 3 to 6 months before it really panned out. I think it was their third quarter results, right, where it finally panned out. So it was about 6 months, and the shares fell 40% on that day when they effectively recognized or admitted that they just couldn't make the numbers work anymore with how bad a business Joseph A. Bank was, and they paid too much for it. We talk about acquisitions a lot, Chuck, you know, about how a lot of these acquisitions can look good on the surface and make earnings look good, but they're not good. And this was one where all that came home to roost.
Well, we also talk a lot about the need for a catalyst. And of course, what you said was there will come a point where they can't support this anymore. And as soon as they made that earnings announcement, you had that 40% decline in a day. And that's the case of a catalyst coming home to roost. Speaking of roosting, you mentioned El Pollo Loco, which we talked about in March. I always laugh about El Pollo Loco because it always gets talked about as like, this is the next, you know, Chipotle or what have you. I first covered El Pollo Loco when I was a business reporter at the St. Petersburg Times in the late 1980s, and they were expanding into Florida for the first time. They were going from West Coast to like, hey, let's open a Florida location. And so I'd never think of this as new and improved. You certainly didn't feel it was new or improved. How badly did it do?
Down 53% while the S&P was down 3%.
And same sort of situation, finally just hit the catalyst?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they had tried to expand before, And we saw this from other stocks. You know, I mean, Dunkin' Donuts is another classic example of where they get the stock all pumped up by telling people, we got a great business model in one certain location, and we're going to expand across the country in these huge growth expectations. Everything's great. Well, the problem with El Pollo Loco is that they unsuccessfully attempted to expand before, as you probably know, and they're like 80%+ of their revenues come out of California. The profitability of the business wasn't actually that good anyway, and as they decided to expand, profitability was going through the floor. Meanwhile, the valuation was going through the ceiling, and there was a reconciliation, you know, between stock price and reality. And, you know, look, for some of our Danger Zone stocks, as we'll talk about next week, that reconciliation has not yet happened. For Pollo Loco, it did. Maybe it's because of our report. I don't know. But they basically had to lower their growth plans and margins in both the second quarter and third quarter. And that's typically, you know, really when investors kind of stop, when they stop being willing to just buy new shares, or debt investors are no longer willing to lend to businesses that aren't working, then the companies really have nowhere to hide.
You were very tough in 2015 on some of the big name, I don't want to call them internet companies, but, you know, sort of the hot, you don't even want to call them tech names because they're not really tech, but Groupon and Twitter, you mentioned as they were two of your big picks. You were hot. You were upset with a lot of the names in that same realm, but why did those two particularly stand out to you?
Well, these guys just have, they've broken business models. Like, there is a disconnect between how they make money and how they please their clients. They can't do both. And when you've got a business that's a not profitable and a really expensive valuation, you know, you've got a hype story. And I want to point out an article in Harvard Business Review called The Overvaluation Trap by Roger Martin and Allison Kemper. And a friend of mine sent it to me recently. And Chuck, I mean, it made me feel so good to read someone else talk about how there's this just almost unfathomable disconnect between valuation and the underlying economics of businesses and the behavioral drivers, not just in the market, but in of management to, number one, take advantage of that, right? Because as long as management can get out before the reconciliation happens, they're happy for the music to keep on playing. And some of the case studies include Chuck Prince and Citigroup, where he's literally quoted as saying, look, as long as the music's playing, we got to dance. And also quoted him going to Hank Paulson when he was head of the Treasury and saying, can you help us get out of this trap where we're overvalued? Because it's forcing us to make decisions that are not good for shareholders long term. Anyway, all this is to say that I'm not the only one kind of pointing out that there are these ridiculous disconnects between valuation and profits and business models. Groupon, Twitter, and Box are great examples, and there are many others where that's the case. And, you know, like you've heard me say on the call before, you know, it's hard for us to tell exactly when the chickens will come home to roost.
Right.
But I will tell you one thing. In markets like the ones we've seen so far this year, the chickens are on their way back to the roost.
Well, Groupon was picked at the beginning of June, I think, and it was down. It was cut in half, which was,
correct,
I think, even bigger than you expected it to be. Twitter down about 40%, right?
Right.
Okay. And so let's finish up the last of the five that you mentioned, Box.
Man, there are a lot of companies that fall into this bucket in the recent IPOs, and we did some stuff on IPO. We put some IPOs in the danger zone before, and I'll probably talk about some of those next week. Box's business model has almost no merit. They've got larger, bigger competitors who are doing things more cheaply. That's why, you know, even though it's down 34%, I don't think anybody should still be touching this thing with a 10-foot pole. It's got a lot farther to fall. The valuation is still what I would call ridiculous. These guys, you know, they may not be around.
It's down 34%. You picked it at the end of January. So down 34% from you picked it. You know, David, phrases like Box's business model has no merit. Tell us what you really think. It's why we love having you on the show, because it is about as straightforward as it gets. And of course, next week we'll be straightforward on the picks that maybe didn't turn out as well as you expected. Some of that, as you point out, may be not because, ooh, they proved you wrong, but because they were just able to keep things going and they still haven't hit that catalyst level. So we look forward to chatting with you next week to see the flip side of this coin and find out how many things that you put in the danger zone are still in dangerous territory, even if they haven't proven to be, say, explosively dangerous yet.
They may not have blown up already, but they will blow up at some point, because as Warren Buffett likes to say, sometimes the market can stay irrational longer than we can stay solvent. Fortunately, we can stay solvent for a long time.
Now, there you go. We look forward to chatting with you about it next week, David.
Thank you, Chuck.
David Trainer is the president at New Constructs. For more information, to look at their most attractive and most dangerous lists and more, go to newconstructs.com. They're on Twitter at New Constructs. All right, we're heading for home on the Monday, January 11th edition of Money Life. Up next, our first Money Life market call of the year featuring Brian Frank from the Frank Value Funds. He is very bearish about things. You'll find out why next.